Hello, knowledge seekers. In this episode of 20 Minute Books, we delve into Vagina by Lynn Enright. Published in 2019, this enlightening book takes a critical and educational look at the female sexual organs, seeking to dispel common myths and ignorance. Through thorough examination, Enright exposes how cultural, educational, and economic forces have long impacted the understanding of women's sexual health. From tackling the myth of the hymen to addressing the challenges associated with menstruation under societal norms, Vagina is a candid exploration of the subjects often left out of mainstream discussions. The book stands as a transformative read for those aiming to acquire a comprehensive understanding of women's reproductive systems and offers implications for broader sexual education reform. Lynn Enright, an accomplished Irish-born journalist now based in London, draws on her extensive experience with notable publications such as Vogue, The Guardian, and The Financial Times to create a narrative that is both accessible and authoritative. Vagina is an essential read for anyone possessing a vagina, those aiming to foster a greater understanding of women's sexual health, and readers interested in the impact of comprehensive, positive sex education on society. Join us as we uncover the often overlooked aspects of sexual health, guided by Enright's expert insights. Vagina, a re-education. Introduction, revisiting the basics, understanding the oft misunderstood female anatomy. Many people, almost half the world's population, are equipped with female anatomy. Yet, there's a surprising fog of confusion and misinformation surrounding this part of the body. From the misuse of terminology to myths cloaked under the guise of scientific fact, the understanding of female genitalia remains clouded. It's time to clear the air and revisit what many think they know about the female reproductive system. In our current society, even the word vagina is often misused, commonly substituted for the term vulva, which refers to the external part of the female genital organs. This mislabeling underscores a broader societal issue. Aspects of female anatomy are often hidden behind incorrect terms and skewed knowledge. Recognizing this, author Lynn Enright seeks to peel back layers of patriarchal misconceptions, combining factual exploration with personal narratives related to various stages of life, including menstruation and menopause. Through her vivid recounting and examination, think of the hymen often shrouded in myth, or the elevation of the vaginal orgasm in heterosexual circles. Enright demonstrates how societal norms have distorted and sometimes diminished the complexity and diversity of female sexual health and anatomy. Moreover, it's important to understand that the scope of medical research has predominantly been focused through a male-centric lens. This angle leaves a gap filled with stereotypes rather than understanding, which Enright aims to correct. By reintroducing listeners to the female anatomy, she not only clarifies misconceptions, but also fosters a conversation intended to reclaim knowledge and demystify the female body. These discussions, while enriched with scientific insight, also offer a cautionary note. They deal with sensitive topics, including sexual health and violence. Such honesty is valuable and necessary, aiming to empower women by educating everyone about the true nature and care of the female body. In summary, this exploration serves as a crucial step towards understanding and respecting the nuances of female anatomy and its overseen complexities in medical and societal contexts. Through this narrative, listeners are invited to reconsider what they thought they knew, replacing myths with facts and silence with informed discussions. Part 1: The Urgent Need for Reform in Sex Education Worldwide. Historically, possessing knowledge about female reproductive health was almost revolutionary. Consider the Middle Ages, when thousands of women, many of whom were midwives and healers, were executed during the witch trials in Europe and America. Their crime: empowering women with knowledge about contraception, abortion, and sexual health, a direct challenge to the patriarchal structures of the time. Fast forward to today, and the scenario hasn't improved as much as one might hope. The inclusion of women in the medical field has grown, yet there persists a stark deficit in research and education concerning female sexual health. Misinformation is rampant, and even a basic online search can yield as many falsehoods and myths as facts. Illustrating this gap in knowledge, a 2016 study involving 1,000 British women revealed alarming statistics. 40% of participants couldn't correctly identify the vagina, and a staggering 60% were unfamiliar with what a vulva is. This lack of basic anatomical knowledge is more than just an embarrassing statistic. It has real-world implications for recognizing abnormal changes or signs of health issues. Globally, sex education is critically flawed, often emphasizing contraception solely through the lens of preventing the outcomes of male sexual pleasure. Lucy Emerson, director of the UK's Sex Education Forum, criticizes the prevalent period, pills, and pregnancy framework, which narrowly covers contraception and the biological basics without fostering a healthy understanding of female pleasure or comprehensive sexual health. In English schools, the situation is particularly dire, with Emerson estimating only about 1 in 15 schools approach sex education in a progressive, sex-positive manner. This is often the result of individual efforts rather than systemic policy. The United States presents an even grimmer picture, with only 13 out of 50 states mandating that sex education be medically accurate. What would ideal sex education look like? For starters, it would include nuanced discussions about consent, gender roles, LGBTQ+ relationships, fertility, and the understanding of pleasure for all genders. Such a curriculum does exist in the Netherlands. Dutch sex education begins at the tender age of 4, with age-appropriate discussions about relationships, anatomy, and personal safety. As students grow, the curriculum expands to include topics on pleasure, equality, and reproductive health. This comprehensive and inclusive approach has yielded impressive outcomes. Dutch teenagers generally start having sexual relations later compared to their peers in other nations, and the country boasts significantly lower rates of teenage pregnancies, 8 times lower than the US and 5 times lower than the UK. Moreover, studies comparing the early sexual experiences of Dutch and American women found that Dutch women are more likely to feel respected and loved in their initial sexual encounters. The contrast starkly highlights the need for a global shift towards more inclusive, accurate, and affirming sex education. As the Dutch model shows, when children and teenagers are equipped with factual and holistic sex education, the benefits extend beyond the classroom, fostering healthier, more respectful relationships, and improving overall societal sexual health. Part 2: Demystifying the Female Anatomy to Counter Health Myths and Misinformation. In a world where the terms used to describe female anatomy are often misunderstood or misused, it's critical to start with the basics. What most refer to as the vagina is indeed the vulva, which includes several distinct parts: the clitoris, the mons pubis, both the inner and outer labia, and the openings of the vagina and urethra. This general unfamiliarity with the correct terminology and anatomy can lead to broader misconceptions about women's health and sexuality. The author herself confesses to previously using vagina generically before realizing that such terminology might inadvertently diminish the full scope of female sexual anatomy to merely a hole, echoing feminist psychologist Harriet Lerner's critique of what she termed psychic genital mutilation. This misunderstanding isn't trivial. It represents a broader issue of misinformation in our society about female anatomy. Educating ourselves about the structures of the vulva can be an empowering first step. For instance, the mons pubis, the rounded mound of fatty tissue covering the pubic bone, grows hair, as do the outer labia. In contrast, the inner labia, covered in mucous membrane, are typically hairless and may be asymmetrical, a natural variation that a 2018 Swiss study confirms is normal, yet many women feel self-conscious about. Moving past the vulva, the vagina itself, often misrepresented merely as a passive receptacle or hole, is an active muscular tube that is capable of significant expansion. It houses the Bartholin's glands, which release fluid during sexual arousal, and the Skene's glands near the urethral opening, from which some women may ejaculate. Internally, the female reproductive anatomy continues with the uterus, or womb, which is roughly the size of a pear in its unstimulated state. The uterus features muscular walls designed to expand during pregnancy and contract during labor. Nested within the lower portion of the uterus is the cervix, which allows for the passage of menstrual blood and the dilation necessary for childbirth. Adjacent to the uterus are the ovaries, almond-sized organs that not only release eggs, but also produce hormones that regulate the menstrual cycle. Understanding these components and their functions is crucial, not just for sexual health, but for overall bodily autonomy and health literacy. Disentangling the intricate details of the female reproductive system from the myths that surround them is more than educational. It's a necessary step toward empowering individuals to make informed decisions about their health and bodies. By embracing a more accurate and respectful dialogue about female anatomy, society can move towards a more inclusive and informed perspective on women's health. Part 3. Debunking myths around the hymen and its impact on female autonomy. For too long, the hymen has been shrouded in myth, often used as a measure of a woman's purity or virtue. This misrepresentation significantly affects female empowerment and autonomy, as seen through the author's own distressing experience. As a young woman in Ireland, a country with deeply rooted Catholic values and strict views on female sexuality, she struggled with basic knowledge about her own body. This lack of understanding took a traumatic turn when, at 19, she survived a sexual assault that left her with long-lasting psychological scars and unanswered questions about her anatomy. The hymen is often envisioned as a definitive barrier at the vaginal opening, a misconception that continues to perpetuate harmful stereotypes about female virginity and purity. Contrary to popular belief, the hymen is not a solid membrane that covers the vaginal opening completely. It is instead composed of thin, stretchy tissue that typically forms a crescent shape around the vaginal opening, although its appearance can vary widely among individuals. Some hymens may form a ring, while others have a thicker membrane, known as an imperforate hymen, which can indeed block the vaginal opening and might require medical intervention. It's crucial to note that some women may not have a hymen at all. Further debunking the myth of the hymen as a universal physical marker of virginity. This misunderstanding has dire consequences. In many cultures, the state of a woman's hymen has been erroneously linked to her moral and social value. The expectation for women to bleed during their first sexual intercourse, a supposed proof of virginity, can lead to severe social repercussions if not met. Women who do not conform to this expectation can face ostracism, violence, or even death. Such is the level of desperation that women resort to purchasing fake hymens filled with dye or animal blood to simulate bleeding during intercourse. Furthermore, some undergo surgical procedures to reconstruct their hymen to conform to societal expectations of bleeding during postmarital intercourse. This misuse of the hymen as a tool to assert control over women's bodies and sexuality underscores a broader societal need to correct misinformation around female anatomy. Understanding the true nature and variation of the hymen is a vital step in dismantling the myths that have long governed aspects of female life and hindered women's autonomy and empowerment. By confronting and correcting these myths, we can start to reclaim the narrative around female bodies and their sexual rights, fostering a more informed and respectful dialogue about women's health and sexuality. Part 4. Unveiling the clitoris, a journey from neglect to understanding in a pleasure-discouraging society. Throughout history, the significance of the clitoris, a key source of female sexual pleasure, has been overshadowed by societal indifference and ignorance. In many educational settings, this critical organ is often overlooked, and scientific study on the clitoris has been dismissively scant, reflecting a broader societal trend that trivializes women's sexual pleasure. Remarkably, it wasn't until the 17th century that the clitoris was given its scientific designation, and even then, its anatomy wasn't precisely mapped until nearly two centuries later. These illustrations revealed not just the external glands and hood, but also the internal shaft and the crura, which are leg-like structures extending beneath the vulva's tissue. A pivotal moment in the understanding of the clitoris occurred in 1993 with the work of Australia's first female urologist, Helen O'Connell. Her research revealed that the clitoris is far more extensive than previously acknowledged. O'Connell's deep dive into the anatomy of the clitoris was inspired by a disparity she noticed in medical practice. While surgeries involving male patients carefully considered the preservation of sexual function, similar considerations were often neglected in surgeries involving female patients. Through dissecting cadavers and employing detailed photography, O'Connell documented that the clitoris could range from 5 to 12 centimeters in size and swell considerably when engorged. Her studies also illuminated how the clitoris interacts with the front walls of the vagina, a dynamic that can lead to pleasurable sensations during penetrative sex. Yet, despite these significant findings, this comprehensive understanding of the clitoris has still not fully permeated mainstream medical education or public knowledge. This systemic oversight can be attributed to deep-seated gender inequalities that manifest in various grim forms, including female genital mutilation, FGM. FGM involves the cutting or removal of external female genitalia and is prevalent in several regions around the world. This brutal practice, performed on approximately 200 million girls and women globally, is rooted in controlling female sexuality and pleasure. The tragic death of Dika Dahir Noor in Somalia in 2018, following a botched FGM procedure, highlighted the dangers of this practice and led to unprecedented legal action in a country where the vast majority of women have undergone FGM. The growing resistance to FGM and the advancing understanding of the clitoris are encouraging signs of a shift towards acknowledging and valuing female sexual health and pleasure. As this knowledge continues to spread, it offers hope for a future where female anatomy is neither shrouded in mystery nor subjected to harmful practices, but is understood, respected, and celebrated. Part 5: Shedding Light on the Female Orgasm. Breaking Myths and Embracing Diversity. Throughout her life, the author struggled with the concept of orgasm, a journey fraught with shame and misunderstanding. From the early days, when orgasms were a taboo topic she dared not discuss, to her trials with self-exploration marred by negative peer comments, to her frustration over achieving only what she thought was the wrong type of orgasm, her experiences reflect a broader societal issue. The narrative around female orgasms has long been cloaked in mystery and shaped by cultural stigmas that limit understanding and open conversation. The prevailing myths around the female orgasm, rooted in heterosexual norms, suggest that true sexual fulfillment comes only from penetrative sex, which unfortunately is not aligned with the physiological realities of many women. Between 50 and 75% of women do not achieve orgasm through penetration alone, yet the emphasis remains on this method due to long-standing misconceptions. These misconceptions trace back to psychoanalyst Sigmund Freud, who in the early 20th century pathologized the clitoral orgasm as immature and lauded the vaginal orgasm as the hallmark of sexual maturity and mental health. This perspective has perpetuated a patriarchal view in sexual relationships, prioritizing male pleasure and marginalizing the diverse experiences of female pleasure. Scientific research has since debunked these dated views, revealing a spectrum of ways women can experience orgasm, whether through stimulation of the clitoris beyond just the glands or via other forms of sexual engagement. Yet, despite this knowledge, the legacy of Freud's theories contributes to a significant orgasm gap. Recent studies highlight this disparity. While 95% of heterosexual men regularly achieve orgasm in sexual encounters, only 65% of heterosexual women report the same, and the figures drop even more dramatically in casual relationships. This gap suggests not just biological differences, but also a cultural discrepancy in how women's sexual satisfaction is perceived and prioritized. It points to a need for more open and informed discussions about female pleasure, emphasizing that women's orgasms should not be seen through the lens of male-centric views of sex, but should be understood in their own right. By bringing discussions about the female orgasm into the open and debunking the myths that surround it, we can begin to address and diminish the orgasm gap. This requires a cultural shift towards valuing female pleasure equally and educating all genders about the diverse ways in which women can experience and enhance their sexual satisfaction. Ultimately, embracing this complexity not only enriches individual relationships, but also advances gender equality in the broader context of social and sexual interaction. Part 6. Addressing the cultural stigma around female reproductive health. In a pivotal move in 2017, the UK's National Institute for Health and Care Excellence, also known as NICE, made a crucial declaration requiring medical professionals to attentively listen to women presenting symptoms of endometriosis. This condition, marked by the growth of tissue akin to the uterine lining outside the uterus, subjects many to excruciating pain, bleeding, and extensive health complications, potentially leading to infertility if left unchecked. Despite its severity, the diagnosis of endometriosis often encounters alarming delays, averaging 7 to 8 years, underlining a systemic negligence in addressing women's reproductive health. Such oversight is not just a modern issue. Historical accounts from figures like writer Hilary Mantel, who struggled in the 1970s and 80s to receive treatment for endometriosis, reveal a disturbing trend. Textbooks at the time pigeonholed sufferers as predominantly anxious, affluent, well-educated women, influencing both the perception and treatment of less privileged patients. This bias underscores a broader cultural pattern where women's pain is often dismissed as exaggeration, leading to inadequate medical responses. The disparity in healthcare extends beyond diagnosis. Studies from the US and Europe highlight that women frequently experience longer waits in emergency rooms compared to men and are more likely to be prescribed sedatives instead of proper pain management treatments. This disparity suggests a deeply ingrained skepticism toward female-reported pain, lacking any scientific basis to justify such unequal treatment. Aside from physical health issues, societal pressures about appearance also significantly impact women's emotional well-being. Cultural norms influenced heavily by pornography promote an unrealistic standard of beauty regarding the female body, particularly the vulva. Current trends in the West heavily favor a hairless genital appearance, leading half of all UK women under 35 to regularly undergo extensive pubic hair removal. This preference, though seemingly trivial, can reflect deeper societal issues regarding body image and self-esteem. More concerning, however, is the rise in surgeries such as labiaplasty, where the inner labia are surgically altered. This procedure, growing rapidly in popularity, stems from misconceptions and aesthetic pressures surrounding the normal appearance of vulvas. Such surgeries further highlight the drastic measures some women feel compelled to take to conform to an idealized image, often derived from a lack of exposure to the natural diversity of female bodies outside of sexualized contexts. The path forward involves breaking the taboos surrounding female genitalia and reproductive health. By promoting open discussions, comprehensive education, and advocating for unbiased medical treatment, society can move towards a more informed, respectful, and equitable treatment of women's health issues. Understanding and addressing these deeply rooted cultural and medical biases are essential steps in correcting misconceptions and ensuring that women's health issues are taken as seriously as they undoubtedly should be. Part 7. Breaking the silence. How addressing period stigma can transform lives. Menstruation, a natural biological process, remains a source of unnecessary trauma for millions around the world. Shockingly, in 2017, 1 out of 4 girls in the UK reported feeling utterly unprepared for their first period, with 1 in 7 unable to understand what was happening to their bodies. Beyond the biological discomfort, menstruation symbolizes a rite of passage that thrusts girls into a realm filled with deep-seated gender roles and societal expectations, accentuating the emotional and psychological impacts. Menstruation involves the shedding of the endometrium, the lining of the womb, when no fertilized egg is present. Biologically, this process can be painful and messy, involving cramps as the uterus contracts to expel its lining, often leading to a temporary loss of oxygen to the tissues and subsequent pain. Additionally, most women experience premenstrual syndrome, PMS, which can cause bloating, mood swings, and depression. An even smaller percentage suffer from premenstrual dysphoric disorder, PMDD, which has more severe symptoms including intense anxiety and lethargy. The silence and shame cultivated around menstruation exacerbate these difficulties. In some cultures, menstruating women are deemed impure or toxic, leading to dangerous practices such as the banishment of women to huts during their period, an appalling custom still observed in parts of Nepal. This not only puts women in physical danger, evident in reported deaths from asphyxiation and snake bites, but also alienates them socially and emotionally. Period poverty further complicates the issue, merging economic struggle with menstrual hygiene. This issue is global. In 2017, reports from Leeds indicated girls missed school because they couldn't afford basic sanitary products. Research in Kenya revealed some young women resort to prostitution just to buy sanitary pads. Such dire circumstances highlight a critical and widespread need for better support and resources for those who menstruate. Improvements are likely when more women and individuals who menstruate occupy positions of influence, potentially driving policies and societal changes that address these needs more directly. Being open about menstruation and actively dismantling the stigmas surrounding it are crucial steps towards empowering nearly 2 billion people worldwide who menstruate. Such efforts can significantly alleviate the biological discomfort and societal challenges menstruating individuals face, ushering in a more inclusive and empathetic global community. Part 8. Challenging the biased narrative on fertility and pregnancy. A call for equality. Navigating the complexities of fertility and pregnancy often places an undue burden on women, shaped by a conversation that seems to disproportionately scrutinize their bodies and choices. Hormonal contraception, a significant aspect of this dialogue, exemplifies the gender disparity. While women contend with side effects ranging from depression to potentially life-threatening blood clots, the development of male hormonal contraceptives has been stymied time and again due to similar side effects, ones deemed unacceptable when experienced by men. This inequality extends to discussions about fertility. Common narratives emphasize the woman's biological clock, while overlooking significant factors like male infertility, which accounts for half of all fertility issues unrelated to a woman's age. Issues like declining sperm count and other male reproductive challenges are seldom highlighted, reflecting a societal discomfort with undermining traditional perceptions of male potency. The dialogue surrounding pregnancy and childbirth is similarly narrow. The standardization of pregnancy experiences conceals the profound variability among individuals. It was only through personal anecdotes from friends that the author came to understand the diverse realities of pregnancy and childbirth, which can range dramatically in their physical and emotional impacts. One stark example of where more awareness is needed is the practice of episiotomy, an incision made in the perineum during labor. While sometimes necessary, this procedure is often performed without the explicit consent of the person giving birth, pointing to a broader issue of autonomy in childbirth. Having a birth plan can be a significant step toward reclaiming this autonomy. Such a plan allows individuals, whether women, trans, or non-binary, to articulate their needs and preferences during labor, fostering a sense of empowerment and ensuring their voices are heard in critical moments. To reshape the discussion on fertility and pregnancy, it's essential to advocate for a more inclusive and equitable dialogue that respects and acknowledges the experiences of all individuals involved, not just women. By broadening the narrative to include men's roles and diverse experiences of pregnancy, and by ensuring that practices like episiotomies involve informed consent, society can make strides toward a more just and understanding approach to reproductive health. This shift in conversation can translate into policies and practices that align more closely with the needs and rights of everyone, leading to better health outcomes and a deeper mutual respect. Part 9. Expanding the dialogue. Ensuring inclusivity in discussions on sexual health. Menopause, often only whispered about in corners or reluctantly discussed in medical offices, represents a significant life transition for many and can be particularly challenging. A revealing study discovered that a quarter of women have contemplated resigning from their jobs due to the severity of menopausal symptoms. This not only underscores the intense physical and psychological impacts of menopause, but also highlights a broader societal issue: the insufficient support and understanding surrounding women's health, especially as they age. Menopause, defined technically as the cessation of menstruation for 12 consecutive months, signals more than just the end of fertility. It involves complex hormonal changes that can significantly impact a person's quality of life. Symptoms can include everything from hot flashes and insomnia to anxiety and significant changes in mood and libido, affecting every aspect of life. But discussing menopause and broader aspects of sexual health must not stop with cisgender women. It is crucial that conversations also encompass the experiences of transgender individuals who deal with unique challenges related to sexual health and hormonal changes, whether or not they choose to undergo medical transitions. It's a profound misunderstanding to assume all trans people aim for full gender confirmation surgery. Choices regarding medical transitions are intensely personal and varied, with significant implications for mental and physical health. Moreover, there's a broader need to recognize and validate the experiences of all people with vaginas, whether they are cisgender, transgender, or non-binary. This includes being attentive to how different treatments, symptoms, and societal interactions influence their daily lives and well-being. The silence many endure concerning menopausal symptoms, exacerbated by societal stigmas and a lack of proper medical attention, mirrors the broader invisibility felt by many in the trans community. This overlap highlights a shared struggle for recognition and sensitivity within healthcare and societal discourse. To truly advance, our conversations about sexual and reproductive health must break free from restrictive gender norms and acknowledge the full spectrum of human experiences. In doing so, we can foster a more inclusive, empathetic, and supportive environment that uplifts and acknowledges everyone, regardless of how they identify or are perceived by society. Breaking down these barriers and expanding our understanding is not just about medical accuracy. It's about enriching the fabric of our communities and ensuring that everyone feels seen, supported, and understood in every phase of their life. Final summary. The primary insights drawn from this discourse emphasize the critical need for a robust and empathetic approach to sex education that extends beyond mere basics of contraception. A truly effective curriculum delves into the nuances of relationships, addresses the complexities of female sexual pleasure, and challenges long-standing myths that pervade societal views on female anatomy and reproductive health. Contrary to pervasive myths, the hymen is not a definitive seal, but consists of delicate mucosal folds, and the scope of the clitoris extends far beyond what historical anatomical studies have suggested. Understanding these aspects demystifies much of the female sexual anatomy that has long been misunderstood or misrepresented. Moreover, openly sharing personal experiences regarding menstruation, orgasm, fertility, and menopause is vital. Such discussions not only educate, but also foster a supportive community that can collectively confront and dismantle the stigmas and taboos that often lead to isolation and misunderstanding. Ultimately, The journey towards enhanced sexual health education is ongoing. It demands continuous learning, unlearning, and relearning, a process that empowers individuals to not only gain a fuller understanding of their bodies, but also advocate for a more informed and inclusive society. Thank you for joining me today on this journey of learning and discovery as we explored the insights of another thought-provoking book in our growing library of knowledge. If you've enjoyed our time together, please take a moment to follow our podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and share 20-minute books with other knowledge seekers. Your support truly means a lot. Don't forget to join me again in the next episode, where we will delve into another enriching book. Until then, happy reading and happy listening.